Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. My name is John Manuel. Thanking you so much for joining us here on Memorial Day. It's our top 25 usual college podcast, but this week, a little bit more important than just top 25 rankings. The 64-team field has been announced. You've probably seen it if you're interested in this podcast. You're looking more for analysis. We're not going to read the whole thing. We're not going to tell you everybody who's in. That's all up at baseballamerica.com. That's all over Aaron Fitt's Twitter feed. That's all over our college blog. Check all those out. And we also want to remind you that we're coming to you from the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook. When it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. We want to thank DeMarini once again for joining us this year and sponsoring the podcast. Aaron, the 64-team field is out, and first and foremost, you deserve kudos. 8-for-8 on the top 8 national seeds, 16-for-16 on predicting the regional hosts, 63-for-64 on picking the field. So let's talk about the 64. That's the hardest part of what the committee has to do, picking those 34 at-large seeds. I mean, we both got emails this weekend from the guys at Utah Valley advocating for Utah Valley being an at-large team. They did win their last 14 games at the Wolverines. Clint Berge lets us know all about that.
They dominated the Great West.
They did dominate the Great West Conference. I mean, they won their last 14. I think they swept through that conference tournament. That conference is basically an assemblage of independent teams. They do not have an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. That's going to be interesting if they ever get an automatic bid. I don't know what the process is for that, but we didn't really take Utah Valley seriously as an at-large team, but we did think there were several conference tournaments that were won by teams that wouldn't have gotten in otherwise. Talk about how that process evolved over the weekend and how Arizona wound up being Team 64, we think, with Kentucky being left out.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly Arizona was the team, the one team that I missed, and I think all the other predictors missed as well. And I thought that they had a chance. I mean, they were my last team out because they do have a strong RPI, because they did win a series early against Fullerton. I believe they won a series against Washington State and Oregon as well. I mean, so there's some things you can hang your hat on there. If you're Arizona, they just really fell apart down the stretch, though. I mean, they lost their last six weekend series, including really bad series against Cal State, Bakersfield, and USC. So I thought that the cold finish would keep them out. But, I mean, I think it's perfectly defensible that they're in. Certainly over – compare them with Kentucky. I mean, take your pick. I mean, Kentucky had some bad losses, too, especially the last weekend down in Georgia. But
It seems like when you're talking about Kentucky, that's really what left them out.
I think that's it.
Losing that series to Georgia when Georgia was just a brutal team the rest of the year.
And, you know, both those teams had a lot of good wins. I mean, I think Kentucky was 16-18 against the top 50 in the RPI, which is, I have to imagine, better than any other bubble team in this discussion.
Yeah, it had to be.
Which is why I was a little surprised that Kentucky got omitted. And I was particularly surprised that the ninth-place team in the SEC, which has gotten in a number of times, was left out in favor of the ninth-place team in the ACC, which has never even sent eight teams to regionals. This year, the ACC does send eight teams to regionals, as does the Pac-10. And one of the teams it sends missed the ACC tournament, which has never happened before. North Carolina is the team we're talking about here.
Right. I think the one thing is that ninth-place team has never been a team that went to Omaha 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
I think that helped North Carolina. I know the committee says it doesn't. The other thing is I think the tiebreaker between North Carolina and Boston College for that eighth place was really arbitrary. I shouldn't say arbitrary. It's not arbitrary as far as the ACC goes,
right.
But it is arbitrary in the grand scheme of who's better for the NCAA tournament, Boston College or North Carolina. I think North Carolina's resume is stronger.
Much stronger.
Than Boston College.
There's no debate there. I don't think Boston College was really that close.
So that's why I think, that's why I use that word arbitrary. Because, yes, it does matter when you're lining up the teams for the conference tournament, but when you're lining them up for the field of 64, I think it's pretty clear. So in my mind, North Carolina was really the eighth-place team in the ACC. They tied for eighth. I'm not trying to give them a break, but I think that's why they got in. I think if they were a game or two behind Boston College, I don't think they would have gotten in, to be honest with you. I think they had a fig leaf of being tied for eighth.
And you know what else? I think this is really important. If you're going to miss your conference tournament and still get into the NCAA tournament, it really, really helps to finish strong. And, you know, North Carolina did.
Absolutely.
They swept a really good Virginia Tech team the last weekend. Virginia Tech, of course, then bounced back and won two games against ranked teams in the ACC tournament, which made what UNC did look even better. You know, Carolina won three of his last four weekend series. I mean, they finished strong. I think that, you know, certainly finished stronger than Kentucky. But,
no
again,
doubt.
That makes me wonder how Arizona got in. I mean, it's like I said, it's okay. I'm fine with Arizona. I'm not outraged like you and I were.
We were outraged last year.
We were on the warpath this time last year.
This is a much more mellow podcast because I think, frankly, because the pool of teams on the bubble were really mediocre.
Yeah.
And there weren't any good teams. Like last year, Rhode Island, we thought, did everything it could possibly have been asked of a Northeastern team to get in as a large team. And they were left out. For, you know, frankly, bottom of the barrel Big 12 teams.
Right.
And there was it just looked terrible last year.
Terrible. Missouri State as well was a team last year that I really thought deserved to be in. You know, Eastern Illinois, you could make a case for them. I mean, there were last year, we've talked enough about last year.
That's right.
Last year was a bad, bad field. This, I think, is a very solid field. And you know, there were a couple of small surprises, small head scratchers, and I'll go over those real quickly. I thought Cal was a surprise as a number two seed.
I thought Cal getting in was deserved.
Deserved?
I thought Cal getting into the two seed was not deserved. They earned their way in by winning that weekend series at Oregon this weekend.
I agree with you, and it helps that they swept, I believe they swept their series with Arizona, which is another bubble team. They swept.
Right. They had that split with Rice.
They had that split with Rice. They won a game against Arkansas early. I mean, I think the committee probably liked that they played a good non-conference schedule.
Absolutely.
I was still a little surprised, though, that, you know, frankly, I had a hunch coming in that it's a Cal team that didn't get to 30 wins, and Cal gets victimized, it seems like, frequently.
There's
by
no
the
doubt.
Committee.
I mean, this team's resume doesn't seem stronger than the 2008 team's resume. The 2008 team got a 3 seed, and this team gets a 2.
That's surprising.
I thought that North, and that was the last bracket revealed on TV. So yeah. UNC and Cal, both the I thought both bubble teams.
Yep.
We were sitting there blogging. Maybe these teams are both getting left out. And not only did not both get left out, they're both in the same regional, and Cal is a 2. I honestly feel we're going to go over this later this week when we have our epic podcast where we rank the regionals and break down every single regional. You won't want to miss that. That's really a ridiculous podcast. But that makes that one of the weaker regional fields in terms of the strength. The Oklahoma regional,
right.
You have an Oral Roberts team that did not even finish first place in the Summit League. Yeah, they won the tournament and they won the league again. This is not your older brother's Oral Roberts team. It's just not as strong as their team have been historically. Yes, North Carolina has been to Omaha 4 years in a row, but it's clearly a team that barely got in. And then Cal, I think, is the weakest number two seed in terms of resume.
Maybe I should save this nugget, but I've had not one but two separate scouts tell me that this is the worst North Carolina team in the last two decades.
Wow, I think that's an overstatement, since they didn't make regionals a couple times in those last two
decades.
Well,
you can make a case. Maybe they shouldn't have made regionals.
I mean, the 1997 team went 6-18 in the ACC. All of that team had talent with Kyle Snyder and Mike Bynum and Brian Roberts all as freshmen on that club. That was the team that wound up being a very good team the next 2 years, but I would take issue with that team. But in terms of talent, this North Carolina team in the field is just not a strong position player team. So,
but that said, I mean, I thought they would get in and they got in, and I think it's good. I think it's fine.
I honestly think they earned their way in.
Yeah.
If they had won 2 of 3 against Virginia Tech, they wouldn't have gotten in.
I agree with you. I think they earned their way in also.
Did what they had to do by sweeping that series.
A couple other surprises. The Citadel as a number 3 seed was, to me, a little bit of a surprise. They won the SoCon regular season and conference
just
tournament.
Just about to say, Citadel versus Cal. In terms of resumes, Citadel's a 2, Cal's a 3 for me.
How about even Citadel versus College of Charleston, which did not win the regular season or conference tournament, which Citadel did in the same conference. How does Charleston get a 2 over Citadel as a 3? I don't know. But
well, non-conference schedule, I think, was a lot stronger for College of Charleston.
Yeah, Charleston had that nice midweek win against Coastal down the stretch. And I mean, Charleston, I think...
Charleston also played that weekend series against Alabama, which is really one of Alabama's best things that it did all year.
Charleston is worthy as a 2 seed. I'm not really taking issue with that. I just thought
Citadel
was
a 3.
Also.
I agree with you.
And if Charleston can be a 2, I mean,
that's
separated.
A 4 bid
they're separated
league,
by,
right?
It's 3.
3 bid league, I'm
They're
sorry.
Separated by 3 spots in the RPI. How do you take the team that, you know, the team that won? I don't know. It's not that big of a deal.
It's not a big deal, but it is a good point. We're separated by only 3 spots in RPI. So you know their RPI percentages were probably quite close together because there's a raw number that's spit out by the RPI. And then you're talking about they're in the same conference, and Citadel won the league and the tournament, and Charleston did not. Yeah.
Although Boyd's has Charleston 6 spots ahead. Warren Nolan had 3, Boyd 6. So it's comparable RPIs. Is the
comparable RPIs, and you're also talking about two teams are in the same city.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be that hard to evaluate those two teams. But I would actually – and one thing to watch with Citadel is Asher Wojciechowski pitched on 3 days rest to win that conference tournament championship game. And he also threw on 4 days rest earlier in the tournament. So he threw – maybe no, it was 5 days rest, not as usual 1 week. So we'll see how that affects Asher Woj going forward. I just wanted to say Asher Woj one more time.
I was surprised Virginia was the number 5 national seed, and that doesn't matter. I mean, once you're a national seed, you're a national seed.
I don't think it matters either.
You don't get a break if you're the number 1 seed versus the 8. They only see the top 8, and then the next 8 number 1 seeds are all considered 9s.
Right.
So it doesn't matter at all.
It's basically geography after that.
It's geography. But I was just – I mean, I don't know how the heck – you know, Weiser said today they had a vote, and 70% of the vote at Virginia is the 5. I don't understand how that's possible when you look at the resume, but that's not important.
Well, again, I think you look at the RPI, and it tells you that Coastal Carolina has this ridiculous RPI.
Even so, Virginia's 3rd.
And where's Coastal?
Coastal's 2.
I just don't, that's what tells you.
Yeah.
That's all. That's the only way that you would think that a team from the Big South, and no offense to Coastal Carolina, they deserve being a top 8 national seed.
No
they
doubt.
Just don't deserve to be a top 8 national seed ranked ahead of Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's any case for that.
That's just a shocker. But it's, again, not a big deal.
Not a big deal. Texas holding on to the number 2 national seed, did that surprise you, considering they just got swept last week in the Big 12 tournament?
It didn't surprise me a ton. I don't think there's much a ton of difference between the top 4 teams in my mind, Arizona State, Virginia, Texas, and Florida.
Right.
You could have had them in any order. But I did think that Texas would be a spot or two lower after going 0-3 in the conference tournament. And Weiser mentioned on the teleconference that some committee members took issue with that 0-3 performance. So I was surprised that they're still number 2 seed.
They are still number 2 seed. What else surprised you, I guess, Aaron, or disappointed you, impressed you? Were there,
LSU as a 2 seed. The UCLA regional, is that's the toughest regional this year. Boy, that's tough for the Bruins as a number 6 national seed. You get the defending national champs coming in, the current SEC champs. LSU is a team that's playing with a lot of confidence, playing very well right now. You got UC Irvine, nice rematch there of the 08 Super Regional between Irvine and LSU.
That's right.
Curious to see if Daniel Bobona will be back from his little tender elbow in time to pitch against LSU. But one thing about that helps UCLA is you have to imagine both the Tigers and Anteaters are going to have to use their big guns in the first
game.
Against
each other.
So, you know, maybe – and UCLA's got 3 guns anyway. It doesn't even matter who they throw in their first game. So, yeah, I mean, that's a tough regional. And Fullerton
– Here's my counter to that being the toughest regional is – UCLA is good, and obviously earned it this year, but hasn't been to Omaha since 1997.
Right.
Doesn't have a lot of history of doing great in the postseason. LSU does have history, but let's face it, this team is flawed.
Yeah. Yep.
This LSU team is flawed. Yes, they have Anthony Renato back, but Matty Ott, as you blogged, isn't quite back.
No.
His stuff is down. They did pitch well, and they did play well in the SEC tournament this year, and they are extremely well coached. Obviously, Palmieri was able to get this team back on track in the SEC tournament. But it's still a flawed ball club.
There's no other
way to put it.
And you know what else?
And then you know, UC Irvine is pretty weak. We thought they'd be good this year. They're really not that good. They're a 3 seed.
They're
a 3 seed by right. They earned being a 3 seed and no more.
Yeah.
And Kent State's fine, but I don't think it's exceptionally. It's a good regional, and especially in this year's field, it is a good regional.
Yeah.
But it's nothing exceptional. It's not a group of
death. It's not like – you're right. John, you're right. I mean, it's not like – it's not even come close to last year's Irvine regional where
you've got
the team that should have been, in our opinion, the number 1 national seed in Irvine. Maybe.
Right.
I mean, certainly
– They had a very good resume to be the number 1 team overall last year.
Sure. You've got – and, you know, they had Virginia coming in, which I thought should have been a 1 seed.
Should have been a 1 seed and a host.
You had Strasburg and Fresno. I mean, that was much more – this, you've got all these teams are seeded properly. LSU should be a 2 on the road.
Completely agree.
Irvine should be a 3 on the road. I mean, it's you're right. I mean, from that perspective, it's fine.
Because to me, like, a tough regional, I don't even know that I'd say one stands out in terms of just being so much more difficult because, again, I do think, to the committee's credit, most of the teams are seeded properly.
Yeah.
I think Texas Christian has a very difficult super regional matchup.
Yeah.
I thought TCU got a very favorable regional matchup.
Agree.
If Arizona's going to get in, it's a 4 seed. I know they have a left automatic bid to fill the 4, but Arizona, for me, last team in. An extremely young team as well.
Yeah, a team that didn't have to go on the road at all or non-conference.
Which was good coaching. That's smart for Andy Lopez. You got your young team. You're rebuilding, kind of. Play 40 games at home. More power to you. You have the right to do that. I'm not criticizing that. you shouldn't be rewarded when you do that. And then you lose your last 6 weekend series. You know, if Arizona loses a weekend series to Cal State Bakersfield and bounces back and wins a regional, and those other teams should hang their heads.
Yeah.
You know,
and then Baylor TCU is going to win that regional.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubts they will. And Baylor, to me, should have been a 3 seed, not a 2 seed.
I thought they were a
fringe
2-3. In fact, in my last projection, my last debate was who was my last number 2. And originally I had Baylor in, and then I flip-flopped them with Oregon. And Oregon State is also a team that I thought was a fringe 3-2.
Correct.
Surprisingly, Oregon State rebounded enough to put itself in position to be in that discussion.
Which was great that Oregon State, good for. I think it's a great year for the state of Oregon to have both Oregon and Oregon State in regionals. That is awesome.
That is tremendous. Awesome. And you know, and both those teams, I think I had them as 2s. They're fine as 3s.
Right. Oh yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I think the committee did a great job. I think that's a pretty weak regional. To me, Baylor is one of the bottom 2s. There's no other way to put it. They're one of the weaker 2s.
No question.
And then Arizona is one of the weaker 3s by definition.
No question.
One of the last teams to get in. You know, to me, the other kind of interesting regionals, one thing that we need to discuss, you discussed it a lot leading up to it, was UConn. We pegged that UConn was going to be a host. We pegged that early on in the spring, really, that once UConn was getting hot, had that win streak, we found out they could host a Norwich. You did what reporters do. You actually contacted the coach to see if they were going to put in a bid, and he said they were going to. So UConn took care of its business. They're hosting in Norwich.
Yeah, let's talk about the field there because
– Right, the field and the fact that Florida State is the number one seed and not UConn. Just your thoughts on that.
For most of the spring, once we decided that UConn was likely to host, I had UConn hosting as a number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And even this week, I think, is my stock
really
report on
Monday.
Tuesday.
Yeah,
my
Tuesday.
Stock report on Tuesday and all the way up until late last night. I had Florida State as the 1 seed. In
Mark Etheridge threw you off, didn't he?
He did. Mark Etheridge.
Nugget?
Mark Etheridge. It's the Mark Etheridge nugget. Mark, if you're listening, this is all your fault. the point was made that of the 6 teams in the last 5 years that have hosted with 20-plus RPIs, or of the 8 teams, I should say, that have hosted, 6 of them
hosted
were
the
1s. And so, I mean,
the exceptions were who? Michigan
who and Arizona State that year when Coastal was out there as the 1 seed. I believe it was Coastal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, I looked at UConn's resume. I mean, and Weiser said that they were very close, their resume in Florida State's. I do think Florida State had a much more deserving number 1 resume.
I agree.
I would have had Florida State as a host over Arkansas personally, but it sounds like that wasn't even a consideration for the committee, and that's fine.
Not really.
I mean, it's hard
Arkansas
to separate.
Arkansas fell
those
apart
teams.
Down the stretch, if you ask me. They had
did
one
they,
good
though,
weekend.
They had 2 good weekends. They won a series at Vanderbilt, and 2 weeks before that, they won a series at Ole Miss. So,
okay, that's
like,
good.
Even though they lost 10 of the last 15 games, they did have 2 good weekends in their last 4.
That's where I'm thinking 5-10 in your last 15 games, and then punting the SEC tournament. To me, the difference there might be the cash register. Although Florida State's going to pack them in, nobody packs them in like Arkansas except for LSU.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the cash register was a
I mean, to me, the difference between those 2 teams, if you're going to make a case in Arkansas's favor, I like Arkansas' non-conference better. I like that they went out and played Cal.
Better than Florida State?
Games. I mean, I like that they went out and played Cal.
Didn't Florida
games.
State play a pretty good one?
Yeah, I mean, Florida State did. I mean, they played Georgia, which was supposed to be a good series.
Yeah, it's hard. That's a tough one.
They played four midweek games against Florida. I mean, yeah, Florida State played a fine midweek non-conference series, too. But Arkansas got out and played some teams out of their region. You know, I think that was a factor. I mean, again, I would have given a slight edge to Florida State, especially after they won their conference tournament and Arkansas punted. But, you know, I'm not going to
I think the fact
that
Florida State got swept by Clemson the last weekend of the regular season really hurt their chances.
They were a lock host until the last regular season weekend, and all of a sudden
– if they just don't lose one of those games, you win your ACC division,
and
you win the conference tournament, there's no way you're not a host.
There's no question.
As it is, though, they still – were second in their division and won the ACC tournament, and the ACC has 2 top 8 national seeds, and one of them is not. It doesn't make sense to me that Florida State's not a host. I think Florida State got sent on the road because Florida State travels better than other teams. They travel with their fans, and it's a nationally recognized brand, and there are a lot of Florida State fans all around the country, and if they're going to send somebody to Connecticut, they want it to be someone. I'm surprised they didn't send North Carolina there, but they're going to send a big brand name to Norwich to help UConn draw.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line. So I think they can't admit that. They could never admit that. But I think the cash register played a little factor there. Arkansas draws so well. Aaron, other thoughts, I guess, about this regional? I wish I had a cough button on this machine, but I don't. The teams that got left out: Wichita State, Florida Gulf Coast, Kentucky. We talked a little bit about. Any of those teams really have a really big beef?
No, they don't. I mean, it's why, you know. That's why I think I posted on Twitter a few minutes before this election show that the committee was going to have a hard time making me outraged today, because all the at-large teams were defensible for the most part. I couldn't see, you know, the committee reaching for Kansas or, you know, some crazy Texas Tech, some Big 12 team that didn't deserve it. There was no way that they could have done that this year. I mean, they were just, Arizona was fine. I mean, I wouldn't have put them in, but they were fine.
Right.
Who was more deserving? Was Kentucky more deserving? Yeah, maybe.
Not really.
I mean, Wichita only had three wins over the top 50.
And their big road series win was Florida Gulf Coast, and they didn't get in either.
Right.
So it's almost like if Florida Gulf Coast had gotten in, that would have been one less at-large spot for somebody else.
Yeah.
But that turned out not to be true because Florida Gulf Coast would have just taken the place of whoever won. Who won that league? Mercer?
Mercer.
So they would have just taken Mercer's place.
Yep.
Then you would have had Wichita State maybe have a better case to get in.
I think that's true. But as it is, I mean, Florida Gulf Coast had, you know, they were 3-8 against the top 50. I mean, you look at Liberty, they were 0-7 against the top 50. Texas State, 2-10. I mean, none of these teams had quality wins. When you compare them with Cal or Arizona, certainly even, I mean, they just don't have the quality wins.
Liberty's a team that you kind of wonder, like, for Liberty, their whole season almost comes down to, boy, you just had to beat Coastal Carolina once.
That's it.
You just had to do it.
Couldn't do it.
And if you'd done that, you might have gotten in. You know, I agree with you. I think this is one of the better jobs the committee has done in years. Obviously, the membership keeps on changing, but this committee had, I think, a very difficult choice because the middle was so muddled.
Right.
Then you had Southern Miss win a conference tournament. You had to take away an at-large spot because they weren't getting in. Mercer really didn't take anybody's spot. Florida International kind of did.
They did.
Because the Sun Belt was not going to get three, right?
It's probably a two-bid league unless Florida Atlantic or Lafayette lost.
Who else took a bid this weekend in a conference tournament? Because Mercer really ended up not taking a bid. If they took anyone's bid, they took Florida Gulf Coast.
There was Southern Miss we talked about.
I don't think there were a lot of other teams that took bids.
I think that's it. I mean, because the Southland only got one. Texas State didn't end up getting in. I know who. St. John's took a bid.
St. John's took a bid, but they basically took it from Pitt.
They took it from Pitt, because I think Pitt probably would have gotten in. Although, the way they finished, I don't think Pitt would have gotten in, even if St. John's hadn't won that thing.
I think you're right. I think St. John's took a bid from Kentucky.
Yeah.
But, or a Pitt, something like that.
A week ago, I thought Pitt was in good shape. Then they lost that doubleheader to South Florida. They went 1-2 in the conference tournament. They dropped into the, you know, mid to late 50s in the RPI, and that wasn't going to get it done. So
sealed their fate. We got some emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We're going to run through these before we end the podcast. Rob in New York says, does the selection committee have it out for UVA? We got two emails like this. After such a strong season, their place number 5 have to go up against Ole Miss and St. John's just to get out of a regional. I would say those teams have to go up against Virginia. If you're a Virginia fan, you shouldn't think about, wow, I have to play Ole Miss. Ole Miss went 16-14 in the SEC. You should
Ole Miss
take care
is
of
nothing
them.
Special.
And while not quite the regional of death they face in 09, it seems to be a little out of whack. Your thoughts?
Don't agree. I mean, I think Ole Miss is a run-of-the-mill number 2 seed. In my original prediction, I had them sent to Arizona State, which was the number 1 overall seed.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're gonna have to beat Drew Pomeranz. Drew Pomeranz is no Steven Strasburg.
And you might not beat Drew Pomeranz. They might have to throw him against St. John's.
Yeah, I think you're
I don't think they want to look past St. John's. I mean, St. John's is playing with confidence. I mean, they won 38-40 games.
Eddie Blank was all over it early.
He said it in February. He says, Aaron, I've been coaching a long time. I know when I got a regional team in my hand, and I got one. We're back.
That's awesome.
If
only you had Charlie Billiziction on this year's team so I could make some more Harry Carey Charlie Billiziction references. That was a player from 10 years ago with one of my favorite all-time Armenian names, Charles Billiziction. Anyhow, Ryan Jenkins asks, why does it seem the committee is more interested in forcing teams from the same region to play each other in the Super Regional rather than ensuring the best teams make it to Omaha? He's got a lot of other examples. The committee is apparently not interested in making sure the best teams actually have a chance to make it to Omaha. I would take UCLA, Fullerton, Texas, and TCU over any of those so-called power conference teams like Georgia Tech, Florida State, Miami, South Carolina, et cetera. And only two can go to Omaha because of bad matchups.
You gotta win the matchups against the teams in your part of the country. In general, that's how it works. It works for out west. That's how it works for
the
Carolinas. That's how it works for the state of Florida. That's how it works for the state of Texas. So
basically, you have to. They want to keep travel costs down as low as they can.
Which is reasonable.
It is
reasonable. I mean, yeah, is it unfortunate for TCU that they got to go through Austin? Yeah.
It's also a safety issue. They always, if you can take the bus over flying, they want you taking the bus, period. That's just the bottom line. That's money, and that's also a safety issue. We also had Kevin Boggs on the Facebook page, facebook.com/baseballamerica. 64 team field is going up now, I wrote, and he responded, what do you guys think is the best strategy for number one seed selecting pitching rotation for the weekend? Do you go with the ace versus the four, or do you save them for the hopeful matchup on Saturday?
It depends on your four. I think if you're Cal State Fullerton and you're facing Seth Rosin in Minnesota in the first game,
sorry,
then you throw your ace, whoever your ace is. I mean, I guess Noe Ramirez is the ace for Fullerton, but they're pretty interchangeable, the rotation.
That's the thing for Fullerton. That's the best scenario. You could throw Dylan Floro if you want to, who's like your
absolutely
ace of the last month against the number four.
But against Seth Rosin, I mean, that's the best pitcher they're going to see in that regional by a lot, I think. I think they need to throw their biggest gun in that game. But if you're, you know, if you're Miami facing Dartmouth, I think you save Chris Hernandez. You know, if you're, I'm trying to find another example. Louisville, I mean, I think you save Thomas Royce rather than throw him against St. Louis.
Like Texas, you have three aces. You don't care. You just throw
right
him.
But I think you save Youngman. I mean, Cole Green's been struggling. I think he's probably the guy you throw against Ryder to get him going.
That's a good point. I do think, I would sum up my philosophy as, if you've got a good number four, if you think you have to throw your ace against them to beat the number four seed, you're probably not good enough anyway to win a regional, in my opinion. I mean, I know there's some good number four seeds out there, but if you're the number one, you should be able to beat the number four with your number two guy. To be a really true national championship contender, a national champion, you're going to have more than one great starter.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
I would save my ace for the second game.
That's what usually happens, and this, I thought, by and large, was a particularly weak crop of number fours. I mean, when I was breaking them down last night, working on my projection, I had too many teams that should have been number fours. I had to make some of them threes. I mean, I had to make Illinois State with an 85 RPI. That's a four seed profile. They were a three because there were so many teams that just weren't better.
Wow, that is kind of brutal.
I mean, that's why you talk about Arizona as a four seed. They weren't even close to being a four seed with that RPI. Given all the, I mean, Illinois State's a three.
You're right. Yeah, Illinois State being a three was an eye opener. Kudos to Mark Kingston.
Mark Kingston. I mean, what an amazing coaching job in his first year.
Our college coach of the year, except for the fact that Tim Esme, the interim coach at Arizona State, takes over in November, doesn't have his ace in Josh Spence all year, and all he does is win the Pac-10. And they have the number one overall seed.
Amazing. Esme and Horton has to be in the discussion, too. I mean, he does. You know,
he does.
Second year of that program back in the Pac-10 to make regionals.
No doubt.
It's impressive. But Esme is the front runner. There's no question.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, like if Illinois State goes and wins the whole thing, that's why we don't name it till the end of the year.
Yeah.
If Illinois State goes and wins the whole national championship, well, I think you'll know who our coach of the year will be. It'll be Mark Kingston.
Kevin Tokarski is going to have to hit about 900 for that to happen.
I like that name, though, Kevin Tokarski. He might go on the all-name team, which is still, for me, headed up by Quintavious Drains.
Quintavious Drains. Jackson State.
Very disappointed.
By the nation lead wins, I think.
Very disappointed that Quintavious Drains is not going to be in the postseason. Aaron, last thing we have to mention, talk a little bit about the SEC tournament experience, and also, well, the two things I wanted to, we should wrap the podcast, but Garrett Whittle's hit streak, you kind of mentioned that.
Yeah.
54 games, that's insane. And then just talk a little bit about going to the SEC tournament for the first time and what that was like.
Well, I'll start with Whittle because that's kind of the talk of college baseball right now, and even getting talk in non-college baseball circles. 54 games is unbelievable. He's two games away from Jolton Joe.
Amazing. Medal or not, that's amazing.
And, you know, Robin Ventura's 58-game hitting streak is one of the most, I think, sacred, revered numbers, records in college baseball.
No doubt.
What comes close? I don't think Incaviglia, even with, you know, the home run record.
Nobody knows Pete Incaviglia at 48. Nobody
exactly
knows it. Everybody who knows anything about college baseball knows Robin Ventura.
Exactly.
At least people who are our age, especially. And if you know Robin Ventura was a big leaguer and you watched the big leagues all those years, it always got mentioned with Robin Ventura. And also, it ended in the College World Series. It was really a huge moment
against
in
Stanford,
college baseball history.
And a premier pitcher.
Jack McDowell and Al Osuna both went on to the big leagues. And it ended on national television. And it helped college baseball come of age in the 80s.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
it. So the fact that Garrett Whittles, a guy who, coming into the spring, was regarded, you know, they expected him to contribute more on the mound, John, than with the bat. I mean, he was not projected as a starter after fall practice. He was a guy, you know, they put in their questionnaire, he's 90-93 off the mound, and he could be a guy, he could be a factor in our bullpen. Here he is starting in the middle infield. He's got a 54-game hitting streak. I mean, it's just remarkable.
That is remarkable. That is just truly amazing. And then, Aaron, I think also amazing, the way that, to me, every other conference tournament is a joke with a capital J, from bad formats to lack of fan attendance, to the fact that it doesn't really reward you. As a conference, you're usually not rewarding your best team with a tournament bid if you're letting some random team win your conference tournament. And baseball should, you know, should reward regular season success.
Absolutely.
But the SEC tournament stands out as a tournament that even when teams like Arkansas punt on it, other teams, it matters to other teams, and their fans in that league care about it. Just talk about that experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, to me, the thing that really stood out more than anything was the Sunday game, Alabama against LSU, which they knew was going to draw a huge crowd. Because Alabama had been drawing all week huge crowds, and LSU always travels well, and they had been drawing pretty well. But, you know, it poured in the morning. I mean, it was just downpour.
Sheets of rain?
Up until sheets of rain, until maybe 11 o'clock or noon. I mean, it was really coming down. The game was going to start at 1. So the game starts, and they fill up the seating bowl. I mean, it had to be somewhere between 12 and 15,000 people there. And we got a delay. And, you know, it was an hour and 20-something minutes or something like that, I believe. Usually when that happens, the crowd that comes back is nowhere near what it was. But all these people hung around. I mean, play resumed, and they filled right back in. It was unbelievable. That is what really stuck out to me. You just don't see that very often.
SEC baseball fans are the best fans in college baseball.
Oh, it's not even a question. When
it's
it comes to intensity,
close.
I mean, you know, SEC fans give me a lot of guff because they care the most.
That's right.
They do. They really, they, you know, and
they're like 15. We sometimes have grouse about the West Coast fans. Leave it with the West Coast bias and all this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, the reason is it's like the same 20 guys.
Right.
No offense to those guys. Actually, you know, thank God for those guys. That they're people who give a damn about college baseball in the West. You know, we were talking about best matchups earlier this year, and like the Pomeranz-Renato matchup. Have we ever had one close to that? And we looked up Seth Etherton against Jeff Austin, number 1 and number 5 teams in the country, 2 first-round picks. There are less than 1,000 people at that game. That was 12 years ago, but still.
Yeah.
Stanford-USC, still the same way. Nobody comes. Nobody cares on the West Coast about college baseball. Not enough people who go to games. And really, shame on fans in the West. And not the West Coast college baseball fans, but the rest of the people who just don't go and pay attention. But in the SEC, they bring it. They bring it at basically
sure
all 12 schools. It's awesome.
It is outstanding. And there was, you know, that the other thing I guess I have to mention before we end this thing, that Auburn-Alabama game to open the tournament at 9:30 in the morning on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you got the place just rocking, packed. I mean, traffic was unbelievably bad to get in there. It took me, the rest of the week, it took me 5 minutes to get from my hotel to the ballpark. It took me 45 minutes at least to get in there on Wednesday morning.
You didn't have the cop car like in the Hangover? You can go on the sidewalk and drive your
no,
way through?
No, I'm afraid not.
That's too bad.
But anyway, the crowd was terrific. You know, for that game, it was half and half, and, you know, War Eagle, Roll Tide, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And Jimmy Nelson dealt. I mean, that's the other thing, of course, that stands out is the level of talent on display there. I mean, that first day, we counted at least 12 scouting directors, at least 2, maybe 3 GMs.
Wow.
I mean, there were, you know, every club had multiple scouts, and why not? I mean, you had Jimmy Nelson in the first game. You had Anthony Renato, who pitched very well.
Jimmy.
You had Sonny Gray in the late game, but not that they stuck around for that. Drew Pomeranz, of course, as well. So, I mean, you had all kinds of great arms. I think it was a great showcase for the league.
Anthony Renato, very good last week.
Seems to be back on track. I mean, he wasn't there, unfortunately, for the last 2 innings last night because I had to catch my flight. And the delays, the rain delay threw me off. But it sounds like Renato was very good last night in relief for LSU. So maybe he's back on track just in the nick of time. LSU is certainly playing with a lot of confidence, and they were very impressive this week. I mean, it's like they flipped the switch. You know, they're the Boston Celtics, John. Everyone wrote them off 2 months ago or a month ago.
Anthony Renato is their Rajon Rondo, I suppose.
Yeah, Renato, or I guess.
Renato, Rondo, they sound alike.
Blake Dean, maybe, as a rejuvenated
Blake
Paul
Dean's
Pierce.
Like, he's a veteran. He's like the Paul Pierce, something like that. I don't think he's anyway, that's all we're going to go on Blake Dean, Paul Pierce analogies. I'm not even a Celtics fan. But great podcast, Aaron. We will be back with like an hour, basically, of podcast action later this week. We break down every regional, and it's a fun time of the year for all of us. So thank you all for joining us. DeMarini Demo House Podcast Nook is where we do this podcast every week. And when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy. Because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the summer started right and visit your nearest demo house today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demo house. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. So long, everybody.